You're listening to Thrive, your agency resource, the only podcast of its kind for creative, media, and technology leaders who are ready to dive deeper into consciousness, leadership, and agency growth. I'm your host, Kelly Campbell. This year, Thrive is brought to you by E2M Solutions, a trusted white label partner to hundreds of digital agencies across the globe. Visit e2msolutions.com/thrive today. Welcome back to another episode of Thrive. There's never been a better time to attract your ideal clients by focusing on your unique superpowers. And we talk about this a lot on the show. What makes you different? Your values, your voice are key to attracting and making connections with the clients who are right for you. We talk about ideal clients over and over again. But I really wanted to bring Lisa Bragg onto the show because she really has a lot of expertise in this particular area. And I want to drill it into everyone about how important this is. So making connections with the clients who are right for you. Today, I welcome Lisa. She's a former agency owner who helps leaders craft savvy and authentic storytelling to promote their work in the world. She's also the author of Bragging Rights, which is a new book that comes out in May. Lisa, thank you so much for joining me on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
So let's start a little bit with your background in media and what you learned from being an agency owner.
Well, actually, I come from agency too, from a different place in that. My first start in career was broadcast journalism. So early to really helping people to do video. So I was a journalist, a broadcaster, videographer for a long time, and then decided, oh, I'll just start an agency without any experience whatsoever. Never had worked in an agency, started it, put out my shingle as a solo, and then grew it to 20 people. And then, you know, ups and downs with it all the way through, but realized that it's my broadcast journalism really helped me to attract the right fit clients and looking out for my audience. And I think that's what I talk about a lot is the audience. So owned MediaFace, one of Canada's first content companies back in 2007 and grew it. So just really enjoyed the agency experience sometimes. And sometimes I absolutely didn't, but was able to take and realize from that my clients really needed to be seen and heard, and then realized that I also needed to be seen and heard through this. Like, we forget about ourselves. We are out there helping amplify our clients, and then we don't amplify ourselves in all of this. So that's a little bit of my journey to where I am today.
So most agency owners, and I think I definitely sort of fell victim to this myself, most of us think that there's one default path in terms of the way of being, the way of leading, and the way of developing business, right? But many of us find out either during that journey or after the fact, maybe after an acquisition, after a sale, after a closing, that there's actually a totally different way. And so talk a little bit about sort of that interesting dynamic where we're kind of taught or we inherently absorb that there is only one way. And then we figure out that we need to be a little bit more authentic.
You know, I think it's first of all, you know, you probably say this over and over again, knowing your lane, but I think a lot of it is we look over and think the grass is greener somewhere else. And then you realize actually it's not after the fact, after you hear what's gone on with their business, after you hire one of the employees from their business and you hear what's going on really inside. So I think we often look to see that someone else is doing better than us, but actually we're doing really well in our own garden. I think too, frequently we always look to the loudest people and we think, oh, they're so loud. They're doing all these great things. Look at them. And we're not out there telling people all the awesomeness that we're doing. So I think that's where things fall, that we always go to who's loud and proud about what they're up to instead of, and then that's not always the real case that they're being the loudest about it, but they're showing off, they're tooting their own horn, which is a good thing. And I do talk about that a lot, but we're not. And that's part of the problem. And there is also, we believe and subscribe to that there's often only one model. You know, we're in an industry that is constantly changing and constantly evolving with all the different tools and thinking that we need to do and thinking that somebody else has already laid part of the way. When I was really deeply involved in MediaFace, my content company, we had a challenge all the time doing video because video was often extremely male dominated. And we found that when we went for contracts, there was legacy with those contracts. And so they would be able you know, they had video production that was worth millions of dollars. And when I put down, well, I can do that video for 50,000, 25,000, 100,000, or whatever number it would possibly be, they wouldn't believe that we could do it because they had been so set. Our clients had been so set in the way it had been done in the past. And so I think we have a lot of that to go through where this is how it was in the past. Why aren't you doing that the same way? And realizing that there's so many advantages to having a different voice at the table or a different understanding of what the scope could be. So, you know, I really had to advocate for my company and saying, no, this is a change and that we can do it. So it's really putting myself out there and saying, here's the change. And I think it's a lot of self-advocacy on behalf of our companies that we have to be out there and explaining the difference. I found too, with my company, there was a lot of education. You know, being first to getting people online with their videos was a lot, teaching them before the whole YouTube, as YouTube was coming in, that, you know, this was the way that they could do it. So education, I think, is still part of all of that we do. So it's communicating our value over and over again to our clients and that different is often good and that they can trust that. And I think that's where it comes down to is when you earn their trust, that's when they'll allow you to show the difference, be the difference, and make a difference in their organization.
You talked about self-advocacy. I love that word. I use that word often. What is the correlation, or what was the correlation for you in those times when you had to educate and you had to advocate for yourself and say, no, there's a different way when talking to the clients? How much of that did you rely on confidence, like inner strength and all of that? Like how much... Yeah, I guess that's the question. How much did you rely on your own confidence and were you kind of faking it to make it or how just talk a little bit about that. I'm curious about it.
You know, I think I was afraid sometimes of picking up the phone. It's like I had to psych myself up sometimes to say, I'm going to make that big call that I know could be worth $1 million. Like, or I know that they're not getting the service that they need to. And so I would write a script saying, here's what I want to talk about so that I wouldn't be nervous. That's what I did in broadcast journalism when I would call some people. I would say, here's my script, the few points that I'm going to say to them and make sure that I hit those points. And then my name and closer, because you forget some of the smallest pieces in the end, like here's who I am and here's how to reach me and all those things. So picking up the phone and yeah, I had to psych myself up, but I don't talk about it as confidence, because we'll never get to confidence. We just have to have one piece of courage. So that piece of courage to say, who do I need to attract? And then how do I contact them? And then what am I going to say to them? And then contacting them. So all those are steps of courage, instead of saying, I have to call this client and then, or I have to call this big corporation. And, you know, we psych ourselves out from doing it because it just seems like it's the whale, instead of just taking a small piece of it and tackling the issue at hand. So I talk about it as steps of courage, because whenever we get to confidence then moves down the track to something else. And so we're always, as agency owners, we're always trying something new and always pushing the boundaries. So we never get to that confidence state. And it's also that S curve where we go, it's like, okay, yeah, I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm doing. I'm great. This is good. And then we realize we don't know what we're doing at all. And we fall down into that pit, that roller coaster, that bottom of the curve. And then we slowly start to gain more courage and come back up again. And then we're masters at that. And then we jump again to something else because something else has been added to our toolkit. And then we go through it again, or we add that next level client that's going to just bring us that much more revenue, or we add in those extra employees that now we're in that, where am I with how many project managers I have and actual tactic workers and all those things. And then the jump again. So we do that all the time. So I talk about being courageous, having that courage to do it and just taking it one step at a time. It's also those stakes aren't as high when we put it as a big thing. We'll have to do this big presentation and big this and big that. Often I found clients didn't want the big anything. They just wanted to get to know me and my staff, my team. And when they did, we, by earning their trust all the way through, we always think about building trust, but what we need to do is earn trust all along. You know, we think about building trust at the last minute and we build these things. But if you earn trust over time, that also helps to get to where we want to go. And we go further, farther, faster when we earn trust instead of build trust.
Yeah, it's an interesting distinction. I often talk about earning trust as making small promises and then meeting them.
Yeah, that's a good one. Exactly.
Hey, let's take a quick break. Did you know that there's a better way to scale your agency? Whether it's web design, development, e-commerce, content, SEO, or even hosting, E2M is the reliable white label partner you wish you knew about years ago. Personally, I'm proud to partner with E2M because of our alignment in values and ethics. Head over to e2msolutions.com/thrive to learn more. Now, let's get back to the show. So talk a little bit about how being more authentic leads to magnetizing the right connections, and then those connections then lead to clients. You've kind of touched a little bit upon that, but maybe just expand upon that a little bit more. So the authenticity really at the core of that.
Yeah, because we often think we need to be that slick, you know, neighbor next door, the other agency down the road, when actually people want to connect with you. We're humans talking to humans, and we're very much in a human-based business. And so when you're not yourself, your clients can feel it. And you know what? They have Joe down the road anyway. So why would they go to you when Joe's already being Joe? So it's just showing yourself and being your authentic self and showing up in the way that you want to show up in the world that fits the audience too. You know, so what do they need from you? What are your values? And I know you talk about values a lot on the show, but people are more and more, as there's so many more agencies, they're shopping by values. So if you and I align, we're going to do work together, and it's going to go deeper than the work that if we are very surface level, we find out that we don't like each other, we're not the right fit. But when we go down and say, here's what I offer, here's who I am, then we'll say, okay, we are connected. And that's when relationships last longer. So when your clients leave that one firm and go somewhere else, if we already are connected at a deep way, then that's when you get to go with them to the next thing. And so you have client A and client B now, because you've done great work at both places. You know, I have the fortune of often becoming friends with my clients. I can't help it. We are friends. We're doing this work that is challenging. And, you know, we all start off with loving each other, right? When we do this work, and then it's like, oh, as we go down, it's like, oh no, we don't necessarily like each other. And
the honeymoon.
And then we come back out of it. And it's like, okay, it's okay. It's like that wheel. But I find with my clients, you know, we know that relationships are sometimes a little rocky, but we open up that communication really early on and have those conversations. And that's where they know me, they know how to talk to me, I know how to talk to them, because we're being authentic right away and showing where we are with things. We know we're on a journey together. And I think that's where clients, especially now, they don't expect you to have all of the answers. I don't know, but I can figure it out. But they expect us to figure it out and figure it out fast. And I think that's a big piece of it, is being authentic to say it's all a learning journey, because they're going through a learning journey too as they go through this, and things are changing so quickly in this era of going through these eras, fourth and fifth industrial revolutions right now, It's a lot for all of us. Yeah. And so we're that guide, we're helping them through it too. So I think when we show up as our authentic selves and give it to them, you know, as leaders too, when we are showing our teams, this is who I am and this is how I am, it allows them to be authentic too. And I think that's powerful. And knowing that the more in power you are, the more authentic you get to be. So not everyone always gets to be authentic. And so on your client side too, if your client is in a position of power, they might be hiding a little bit of themselves to their corporate side. So you might get to also find them in a different light than what they've been showing their internal team. So I'd be on the lookout for that, because when you see that and you can tap into that, that's magic for you and something that you can use too.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that you're kind of bringing that up, and just that tie into leadership and also business development, right? So it's about tracking what's actually true and what's needed on the part of the client, right? So modeling vulnerability and authenticity as a leader of your agency for your employees, but then also maybe modeling it, maybe tracking your client to understand like where you can pull a thread to get more information and help them serve them better, right? That's what I hear you saying.
Yeah. And that's exactly it. And realizing that vulnerability comes from different places for everyone. So you have to do what feels best for you, and know that sometimes too, when we're in a situation where it might be a wound right now, and then you can tell the stories later on when it's a scar. So sometimes we can talk about things that are hard right away, but often it's when we have some distance from things, because everyone's always right now talking about be vulnerable. But sometimes we have to hold off on those stories and just know that they're a story for the future and maybe not for today.
Yeah. It's interesting, because we talk a lot about vulnerability, and just recently it's kind of come to light that you know, vulnerability has become like this buzzword, you know, sort of thank you, Brené Brown, but it's the right time, the right place. And also what you said, I want to put a pin in that. Vulnerability looks different for different people. So it's to your comfort level always, right? But taking the step first to be a little bit vulnerable as a leader, I think that's an important point to make in this conversation. But yes, definitely looks different for everybody.
Yeah, it definitely looks different. And that's where if you show a little bit, then your staff will feel a little bit more comfortable. Your team will feel more comfortable with also articulating their vulnerabilities, but don't expect them to show everything.
Right.
Because if you're in a position of power, then you can show everything. But when you're not, it takes time and earning of trust all the way through. And again, a story that might be for today or might be for 5 years from now, depending on how you feel about things. And I think that's, you know, we want to have that sharing so we feel that camaraderie. You know, humans are storytellers and we want to hear these things, but a lot of people aren't in the position to do it. And also historically, they haven't been in a position to tell these stories or cry or to do anything. And it's like really risky for us to do it. We feel so much shame and we carry these shame things. And so depending on where you are on the ladder, you know, you can tell your stories of shame and vulnerability quite easily. But if you're a lower level person, then you're not going to want to put that right there on the table. But people are calling all of us to be, you know, the rally call is being more vulnerable, but it can be a dangerous situation depending on where you are. But as leaders, go with your comfort level and tell those stories because it'll just make your team feel much more comfortable with you.
Yeah. I think it's also important to notice or to say that it's not always just in terms of like the hierarchy of where you might be within an organization, but it also is part of your background and your identity. You know, BIPOC employees or LGBTQ employees, vulnerability is going to be even harder, right? So just another thing to kind of keep in mind.
And definitely it's a cultural lens too. So in my book, Bragging Rights, I talk about in the research, you know, I looked at people all over the world and from different backgrounds and different intersectionalities. So where are they socioeconomic? Where are they culturally? Where, you know, so many different things that come into making who we are. And so with that, understanding that they might have been always told, put your head down, do good work, and eventually someone will notice you. And so we're not as quick to say, oh, look at me and or tell our stories. No, because it's supposed to never be about me. It's supposed to always be about you. And so that's a big hurdle for a lot of us because we've been culturally told to play small, don't talk about yourself, you know, wait till you're spoken to, all those things. And then we find ourselves out on the world stage and we're having to say, oh, actually, I have to change all that programming that I've had for not just my life, but generationally and culturally or, where, you know, your whole background, you have to change that. And so many of us are taught and we're taught also from the factory era. And again, we're in a different, totally different era now and moving very fast into the next era with all the technology that's happening at our fingertips. So it's a challenge for all of us to rethink that and understand where the other person's coming from. You know, a lot of us have the cultural nuance too of, well, what will they think? So if I said something to you and it's like, well, what would she think? Oh my goodness. You know, we hold that as a behavior marker. And it's almost, if you're listening to it, I'm wagging my finger right now at the camera. It's like, what would they think? It's not like, oh, well, what would they think? It's a negative. You have to hold yourself, contain yourself because of this influence of thinking. And it's long ingrained. And one of the stories in the book talks about a woman. It was as simple as, what would they think if you cut your hair? You know, so if you start with that, ingraining that as a young person, well, what would they think? And who is this? Who? It's anyone. It's an anonymous thing that we've made that we have to act a certain way. So understanding that is a big piece of helping people to move forward.
Well, I'm glad that you touched upon some of the content in the book. I'm very excited for that to come out. That's coming out next month in May. Where are we going to be able to find it? On Amazon? Is there a website? Where can people learn a little bit more about you?
Yeah, you can come to my website, lisabragg.com, and there's information on the book there. It's going to be available worldwide in every bookstore, so you can find it at your favorite, and of course, on all the big ones too, nice to make it simple, nice and easy. And I also have something for your listeners. If you want some storytelling tools and a little bit of preview of the book, go to lisabragg.com/listenerlove. I'm sure it'll be available in the links, and there'll be a whole thing that they can click on and collect that so they can start their storytelling journey. And I know all of them are mostly storytellers as it is, but how do we think about our stories in a different way to really help our audiences connect with us in a deeper way.
That's really generous. Thank you so much, Lisa. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And thank you for joining us. If you liked this episode, please rate the show or subscribe wherever you watch or listen. And a big thank you to the official sponsor of Thrive for this year, E2M Solutions, your white label agency partner. Learn more about their approach, services, and subscription plans at e2msolutions.com/thrive.